Human trafficking happens daily in Indiana and is often undetected. In this next piece, WFYI's Taylor Bennett speaks with statewide anti-trafficking coordinator Kate Kimmer about efforts to fight the escalating issue. As a warning, this story contains emotionally difficult content about disturbing crimes. Their conversation begins as Kimmer tells us human trafficking happens throughout the state.
This crime is happening everywhere. It manifests differently. Different folks are vulnerable for different reasons. In our rural communities, we are being plagued by an opioid epidemic, right? When parents can't get their basic needs met, whether that's paying for rent, paying for food, or paying for drugs, they're using their children to make ends meet. So, I mean, in our rural communities, over 30% of our cases are familial-based trafficking. How difficult is it for a child to come forward and say, my own mother is trafficking me? You're not going to say that. The likelihood of that kid ending up, let's say, in juvie because they're skipping class or they're running away from home is fairly high. And then they're not getting the services they need and we're not identifying them. So it's literally happening every day across the state of Indiana. It happens in every county. We see labor trafficking. We see forced marriage. We see sex trafficking. And I know for a lot of Hoosiers, I think, there's just this belief that things are kind of fine. You know, things are fine. Things aren't that bad. If I don't go to a certain area of town or I don't go to the big city or whatever it is, everything's fine. But the reality is trafficking permeates every aspect of our lives. It's whether or not you see it. I guarantee every person listening to this today has spoken with a trafficking survivor, whether it was at the grocery store or one of their kids' friends at school, or somebody sitting next to them in their church pew. They just didn't know.
What do we have in place, law enforcement, to help address this?
So we have quite a bit of legislative changes that have occurred in the last several years, which I have to say has been a real pleasure to work at the State House. It's gotten really unfettered bipartisan support to change laws that protect folks who have experienced trafficking and hold traffickers accountable. So this year we are looking to try to address the demand for commercial sex a little more intentionally, specifically around with our youth. But we have a lot of work to do when it comes to service provision. Our state has no dedicated funds to HT. We have no line item in our budget for human trafficking. And it's unacceptable. Right now, we're really leaning into our parallel movements in sexual assault and domestic violence to address an entirely new population that they're already stretched thin to serve their own population. And listen, they are stepping up and they're doing amazing work, but it's not fair to ask that with very limited resources. We need more resources for the folks that we serve.
Okay, what can local officials, parents, maybe just the public do to maybe be more aware, identify, prevent human trafficking?
I basically ask everybody at the end of any training I give to any audience to walk out into the world and be kinder. And I know that maybe sounds strange, but for a lot of the folks that I serve, the first time that they experience real compassion from another human is usually a bit of a shock to their system. And they haven't had an experience with healthy attachments, right? And so a lot of times these kids are the very kids that you're saying, I don't want my kid hanging out with that kid, right? They're a bad influence. Bring that kid into your home then. Be the good influence for that kid. I think we've lost a lot of our sense of community across the state of Indiana, across the United States, really. It's somehow one day, I don't know when it happened, but everybody's just living in their own home, living their own lives, and it's not working. We are interconnected. Violence impacts all of us, whether it's directly or not.
Thank you.
That was statewide anti-trafficking coordinator Kate Kimmer speaking with WFYI's Taylor Bennett about efforts to stop human trafficking in Indiana. In this next piece, Bennett speaks with a survivor, Eric Harris. As a warning, this story contains emotionally difficult content about disturbing crimes.
Eric, you are a survivor of sex trafficking. Can you share a little bit of your story with us?
My mother did sell me to a trafficker at the age of 11. And during that period, I endured, pretty much being taken advantage of by a different man every night. And after time, when I walked away from the situation, because there was a point in chance where I got to run away, I really was not open about it because of A, I didn't want nobody calling me a liar. B, the people that they tried to connect me with, service providers, were males. And by that point, I did not trust males. And at the end of the day, it just led me down a big, long, dark path of being malice out of control behavior to the point where the state took me away and made me a ward of the state. And this behavior continued on until about age 34. It wasn't until I actually started connecting with other survivors that I realized I was survivors, that I was a survivor as well. And that's just due to the fact that in my mind, I didn't consider it commercial sex trafficking. I just thought I was dealt a very unlucky hand in life. And after connecting with other survivors, that's when I started the process of change for myself. And that's why today I'm going for my social work major. So that way I can help people that have been marginalized just like I have. And I think another misconception too is that people don't think that it happens to males. And it does happen to a lot of males. It's just that in our society, they validate that that's a weakness if a male talks about sexual exploitation. And at the end of the day, my job as being a lived experience consultant is to let other males know that it's okay to be vulnerable and still be a man.
Some people may have a belief that a stranger is responsible, that a stranger can abduct someone, turn them toward this behavior. But that's not always true. In your case, it was family.
It was family. And actually, I was sold to a coworker that my mom worked with. And basically, he saw the level of vulnerability of the fact that I didn't have a male role model in my life. And he just kept promising me a better life, having this nuclear family that I always wanted. And at the end of the day, after DCS came through, did their checks and balances, that's when I was sexually exploited. There was no locks on the doors. I was given the illusion that I can come and go as I please, which I do think happens to a majority of survivors. And at the end of the day, I got lucky, and I was able to run away from my exploitation. But it took me a long time and many years of therapy to be vulnerable about my exploitation.
And you talked about connecting with other survivors. How did that happen for you? How did you get onto that path of getting out of that situation and talking to people that had similar situations?
A lot of us do acquire a criminal record, and that was due to my outrageous behavior. And so when I got out of prison, I knew that I could no longer rely on the streets for survival. So that's when I started to look towards psychology. And ironically enough, in the service provider sector, a lot of people have personal events in their life that makes them want to motivate to change. And that was mine. I wanted to make sure that in the long run, I could do prevention with teens that just got exploited like I did at the age of 11.
And now you say you're going after your license to be able to help others.
Yep, and LCSW, that's the plan.
That was Eric Harris sharing his story with WFYI's Taylor Bennett.